Kaiho, Wanju, and welcome to another episode of the Curve Podcast. My name is Andrew F. Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. One of the smash hit films of the year on the festival circuit has been Mike Cheslick's wonderfully inventive indie film, Hundreds of Beavers. Ahead of the film launch in Australia earlier this year, Nadine Whitney caught up with the creative team behind the film to discuss all of its eccentricities. Nadine wrote about the film saying that, "For too long, the myths of American folk heroes, and eventually politicians, of the North American frontier have had a weird and persistent hold on manhood. Madman and Midwestern genius Mike Cheslick takes this myth and upends it with pointy stick satire, knowing actual kitsch, references from everything to Chaplin, Wells, Conan Doyle, Westerns, Buster Keaton, computer games, and horny plushies. It's a true riot of mixed media brilliance. No wonder Guy Maddin loves it." Now, of course, Hundreds of Beavers has had its run in cinemas in Australia and is now available to watch on demand in Australia, and we highly recommend pulling together a group of friends and to yak it up with this deliriously delightful film. Stick around and listen to an interview with the creative team behind the film with Nadine as well. But in the meantime, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Curve Podcast. It is a truly independent podcast with no ads and no whatsoever other support, except for you, the listener. And you can do that via patreon.com/thecurveau to show your support from as little as $1 a month. All right, here is a listen to the trailer, followed by the interview with the Hundreds of Beavers team and Nadine.
Hello, lads.
Hello, Nadine.
You messed up, geniuses. In my review, early review, I have it here from July 24th, 2023. So, you know, I'm an early fan. I said...
Thank you for supporting us before you got peer pressured into it, when you truly believed. I believed
in you... I believed in you from Lake Michigan Monster onwards. It's fine. I am with you.
I'm starting to notice that all public opinion flows from only a few sources. So it's a pleasure to find one of the wellsprings, Nadine.
I think I might be accidentally, because my opening for the piece was, Hundreds of Beavers is unlike anything you've ever seen before or will ever see again. And I start referencing all the things you reference. And then I started looking at other reviews and like, okay, so they've seen the frontier myth, they've seen the computer games, they've seen the idiocy of men, they've seen the busy beavers, they've seen the horny furry sex, they've seen...
Mostly that.
Oh, a lot of that. They've seen the Donkey Kong, the Looney Tunes, the Buster Keaton, the Guy Maddin, the middle finger going up against the Daniel Boone idea of frontiersmen. And it's like, I thought that was me, but I think it's you because it's all in the film. So what I would like to talk to you about is, I know it was done on an extremely limited budget and all very lo-fi. How did you get it together? How did you make it happen? How did you make a silent melodrama, computer game, slapstick, Buster Keaton, sci-fi piece in the Midwest?
I'll tell you very specifically. So we bought a pair of scissors, and I have a printer. So we printed out this treatment that was just the basic Joseph Campbell structure of he's kicked into the woods and he must grow. And then eventually he is a great fur trapper. And then the beavers try to get their revenge. And we had this very simple structure, and I used the scissors and I cut up the each sentence from the structure, and we put them on my kitchen table. You're also going to need a kitchen table if you're going to be doing this. Then
I don't have one of those.
Pardon me.
Mm-hmm. I don't have one of those. I'm
and
not that
what
organized.
We're doing is out of reach for you.
Yeah.
And then we took index cards, and every time we had a gag idea, we would draw that on an index card, and we would place those into this structure that we know works of a person growing. And once that was all established, we used tape to lock it in, and then we boarded the animatic in Storyboard Pro on a computer. And then we had these storyboards for a whole movie. That took, I don't know, months.
Yeah.
It took months. We were thinking of like a gag a day. We're not that funny. So it was like an 8-hour.
You are that funny.
I'm so sorry.
You are that funny.
Yeah. Agree to disagree.
You're much funnier than you think.
Agree to disagree. I think just 8-hour. People are like, wow, how'd you think of so many jokes or whatever? And it's just like, no, the joke to work ratio, I think, is 8 hours for one joke. And then a year to execute that one joke.
Yeah, we had a ton of ideas. And so over the course of many months, you just have to say, okay, well, what are the funniest jokes and how do they all connect to each other? And how can we make them callbacks and have all these runners going? And is this something that we can physically execute out in the woods? And by the time we would actually come up with a gag, it went through so much figuring out that it wasn't even funny to us by the end. So like when we were out shooting the movie, we would execute a gag and we'd watch it back once Mike was editing it in the cut. And we were so used to thinking of these gags that by the time he put them all together, it wasn't even funny to us anymore. It was just more like, correct, gag has been executed properly. Next gag. Like it became a very robotic thing for us. Because again, when you're out there shooting in the woods, there's no time to, you're so busy trying to keep warm and not die that it became kind of a slog. But once you actually get all the gags lined up with the sound design, then you're like, you remember, oh yeah, this is kind of funny.
Well, I lived in Minnesota for a while, so I do understand the fall over in the snow for too long and you die aspect of cold.
It just makes me giggle every time. That's why we knew it'd be a hit comedy. Just the idea of just dying in the icy snow just tickles us. So we just knew that it would fundamentally be funny at all moments. And I think the Midwest comedy is mostly based on doing something physical wrong.
Yeah.
We had a bunch of the guys that we had to help us play beavers and stuff. I mean, these were just guys that we knew could go up north in the snow and handle it and weren't going to complain or anything. So, you know, even though we were only paying them in beer and nicotine and caffeine, they were just really good guys who were just down to do whatever we asked of them. And without just knowing our buddies from like high school, the movie couldn't have been made.
Yeah. The payment was at the end of 12 weeks, you get one small flank steak that I cook a little wrong.
Oh, that is quite a reward. So you don't actually get a sexy pole dancing furrier at the end.
No, but we did last night at the IFC Center. We did do Olivia did her burlesque dance live for the audience at the IFC Center.
Mm-hmm.
One night only. For
one night only. I'm sorry I missed that because I'm in Australia and I'm not going to the IFC Center just for a burlesque dance. But I do wish I had seen it. I want to come back to where you said gag executed. It's actually quite funny because the whole thing does run like a computer game simulation. It is mapped out what you have to do. It's blocked, your life restarts, you have to do it again. Every plan you make, you have to collect something new to use for the next thing, to get the next thing, to then win the prize at the end.
I can speak to that. Basically, the RPG structure is very satisfying for people to grow and get better at something. And we just wanted to make a movie that, instead of having elliptical edits across a montage of someone getting better, that forces you to watch the entire video game of somebody slowly getting better over and over and over again. And I think it's the thing that motivates you to be good at a job in real life, and that's satisfying about becoming proficient in real life is also satisfying in video games. And so whether it's learning to fur trap or getting better in Dark Souls, this is just a path of human thought that's satisfying for people. And we thought it was about time that movies be married with video games, since that's how everyone's brain is starting to work.
And it plugged in really nicely with this idea of a trap line too, because that's what actual trappers will do, is they'll have a trap line and they'll set their traps and, this might have worked, but this trap didn't quite work. I have to adjust accordingly. Okay, now on to my next trap in the trap line. This one didn't quite work. I have to adjust this. Then you come back around the next day and see if it worked. So like the two just sort of combined together work really nicely.
He thought it was nice. I think we did okay.
You did okay. I mean, you did more than okay. I don't know how well it's been received, but it looks like it's been received extremely well. Again, I wrote my review a long time ago. I loved it, and I thought, I really need people to see this because they will get it. What worked for me, and I'm not going to really spoil it for anyone, is the idea that beavers are busy. They are busy doing things. They make dams. They do stuff. What if they're evil? What if they have real plants?
Yeah, we kind of left the what are they up to toward the, we had already shot a lot by the time we decided what they're up to. And I won't spoil it here, but they're up to something. And
they are.
And we like this Tom Waits song, spoken word track. What's he building in there? What's he building? Have you heard this, Nadine?
I listen to Tom Waits far too often. So yes. Yeah, I have.
We like that feeling of, what's he building in there? Like George Clooney in the Coen Brother DC movie, Burn After Reading. There's just this whole intriguing thing of, what is George Clooney building in there? And we wanted it to be like that with the beavers. What are they up to? And we needed a satisfying answer. And when we came up with the answer of what they're doing in there, we weren't even happy. We thought, that's probably what it should be. That's going to be a lot of work, but I don't know what else it could be. That has to be what they're up to. So again, I won't spoil it, but it was decided a little later.
Yeah.
What they're up to.
Yeah, and like Mike said too, it wasn't even like a satisfying, like, oh yeah, we should do that. It was more just like, oh God, unfortunately we have to do that, and it's going to be a lot of work, a lot more work than we'd already done. But if we want to give a really satisfying third act to this movie, it must be this. So that tacked on another like 6 weeks of shooting.
Oh God, how terrible for you to have a hit movie that you had to actually work on.
No, it is how unhappy.
It must suck to actually do a job.
No, I remember your review. I really appreciate all the thought you put into it, and like people that get the references and are thinking intelligently about our stupid movie, it's like very, very rewarding. And it's what keeps you motivated while you're out there in the stupid snow, knowing that you might be able to find an appreciative audience or someone that's going to put a lot of thought into, you know, their reaction.
Yeah, I adored it. I laughed my ass off. It's not even necessarily because the gags work, is because I recognized where the gags came from and the beauty of what you were were referencing and how you did that so well. You know, it's a silent film made now. And how does one make a silent film now and make a contemporary audience appreciate it? You have to draw on the past and the present and merge them together to give them something that they can pass as an adventure. And I think you did that so very well.
Thank you. Yeah, we just think memes and video games are here to stay, and it was about time they'd be roped into this great tradition of slapstick that we're inheriting.
Well, you know, the Dadaists cut up whatever they had available for them to recreate art. It's not a new thing to do. I mean, William Burroughs used the index card thing. You know, a lot of avant-garde and weirdo outsider artists have just done the, I'm going to randomize this and then put it back in order and see what we can get out of it. And I think that's what your film was doing, is that you were randomizing and putting back in order. I don't play video games. Well, I did. I played Frogger. So
one time, I'm pretty good regret at... it.
Sorry?
That's good to hear. We cut a Frogger joke. It's impossible to explain verbally, but I'll do it right now. Rylan was going to run across. We're in a high angle Frogger shot, and Rylan's going to run across logs. And as he's jumping across logs on a river, the camera's pulling back. And once he finally, with great difficulty, crosses the whole river of logs that he's leaping between, we've pulled back to reveal two handicap walkways on either side of the river. Is that see, we got a laugh for explaining a visual joke. Thank you for your fake laugh and for taking us seriously.
No, it is actually a very good joke. I mean, I again Frogger, Wizbold, do you remember that one with the like wizard and the cat? Like, I'm talking Commodore 64 tape stuff.
I don't know what that is. I'm 22.
Sorry?
I'm kidding.
You're 22. I just
happen to have avoided any wizard-based games. I don't believe in that.
Yeah, no, it was just like this little kind of shooting up thing where the wizard had a little cat and they had to collect things, like a kind of Pac-Man thing. Anyway, I was
wizard
great
topic
at that.
Is very personal to me. Nadine, if we could just avoid the topic of wizards in this interview, it just make me a lot more comfortable. I have a thing with wizards. It's a little bugaboo of mine. I really would just like to not. I have a lot in my past with wizards, and if we could just talk about something else other than wizards. Justin, did you not prep her with my wizard bugaboo? It's a sore subject for me, the wizards.
Well, I mean, I would have, but you know, every single person who's been part of the team has been name checked today, except me. So I left the wizards out of the rider.
No, Nadine, I'm of course kidding, but I just overall really appreciate how seriously you've taken our like silly movie, and that early on you welcomed us into being discussed as art and not just as a gag comedy made by a bunch of bros in mascot costumes.
Well, I mean, considering how dumb the guys are in the film, I don't really think it's a bro comedy at all. Neither was Lake Michigan Monster. You know, the smartest person in that team really was, you know, your woman.
Edge Pepsi.
Yeah. I really don't think it's bro stuff. I don't really react well to bro stuff because, you know, I'm 1,000 years old and I'm kind of over bros, but no, I had much more fun with it than seeing it as, you know, a couple of dudes just going, hey, look at us, we've got beer, we do stuff.
Well, good. It's like, reminds me of seeing, like, I saw Modern Times in Milwaukee with like hundreds of people in like the symphony venue. And it was like people of all ages and all types of people. And you wouldn't have even had to have spoken English to be in there. Like it was just all different types of people appreciated it. And I don't know, it has helped us picking very fundamental subject matter, such as the cold and trying to eat and things that are very fundamental. And so it's helped us find a wide audience of a lot of different types of people that have enjoyed it.
And just getting through the machinations, the machine of living and surviving. I mean, it's set, what, it's late 19th century, early 20th century?
Yeah, we're going to say it takes place in 1805.
Oh, right. So it's 1805. Well, that's very, that's early 19th century. You're lying to me, aren't you?
No, or I mean, I decided that now, but it can be true.
Okay. I will just write, these men are habitual liars. Do not trust a word they say. and you know, starts out with a brewery being exploded. Cider brewery?
High-proof. Freeze distilled to have a liquor, a higher, you know, you just keep freezing the water out of cider until it's like a liquor. And there's one company that still makes it that way in the U.S. I am blanking on the name, but it's not a type of liquor that people really drink anymore, because now we have glass. And with glass, you can do proper distillation instead of barrel freeze distillation.
We do. And we also, you know, can just go to whatever bar and just get a big bottle. So we're fine.
Life has become easier, all thanks to Jean Kayak.
Yes. The George Washington of his time.
Do you think that Nedge Pepsi should have shown up in Hundreds of Beavers? Would you have enjoyed that if the sonar expert?
I would have enjoyed a crossover. What I loved about Lake Michigan was its sort of 60s spy vibes, almost, you know, but it had the nautical aspect and you know, silly monsters. And I don't know if there's anything actually in Lake Michigan. I don't know. Is there anything
not
in
anymore.
Lake Michigan?
No, it was taken care of by Captain Seafield. It's now I'm just trying to tell the history of Wisconsin and how it slowly became comfortable.
But it's funny because our producer Kurt is wearing a Nedge Pepsi t-shirt right now.
The Nedge heads still reach out and they say, "Where's Nedge?"
Well, she is kind of an Emma Peel type, and we do like that.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Who is Emma Peel?
From the Avengers, the series. Emma Peel and John Steed, played by Diana Rigg.
I know what you're referencing. I've never seen it, though.
Oh, my.
He's only seen Uma Thurman.
Oh God. I'm so sorry.
Running short on time, Nadine.
Okay, what do you want to say? Why should people come see your film?
Because we work very hard to entertain you, and we promise a lot of laughs, and we want to show you something different, and it's a small team trying to give you a different choice from the kind of comedies, the kind of talky comedies you would usually see at home. We suggest seeing a movie with no talking with your community in a theater, and we think you'll have fun, and we work very hard to make sure you have fun. And if you don't have fun, call Ryland, whose phone number is... Hold on.
Wow. It's not memorized. I'm a little
It's
55-4699-3564.
If you don't like the film, just call Ryland.
Okay. Well,
obviously for wasting your time.
That's okay. You did not waste my time. Have you got anything on the horizon? Anything coming up? Are you working yourselves into a new frenzy?
Yes, we are. We've begun work on the third feature film that we're going to be making together, and it has a lot of kung fu, and we love 80s Hong Kong films, and it's another great tradition of physical comedy that we want to steal from.
You absolutely should steal from Jackie Chan, steal from Jackie Chan, all of it. Do it.
Endless. Agreed.
It's really all you need.
And agreed. Also go track down the ITV Avengers series and watch it. My God, I'm giving you homework.
We will have it in the corner of the screen during our next interview.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Curb Podcast, and make sure to check out Hundreds of Beavers on demand wherever you have a good TV, laptop, or telephone. Whatever device you want to watch it on, we highly recommend checking it out. Thanks again for listening. Please make sure to head over to patreon.com/thecurbau to help keep the Curb independent. Till now, we'll see you on the next one.